What up? This is Dart Adams, and welcome to episode 85 of Dart Against Humanity. So last week, my episode was about two specific articles related to two different aspects of sample-based culture in terms of rap. One of them was an article about a French group called Cortex, which is well-known in terms of like the hip-hop sample record-digging community, right? And it's kind of gone mainstream because mainstream artists have sampled them. And the other article was pretty much about someone who was young who was digging for a sample source but using digital means, as opposed to getting his hands dirty, digging the way we did back in the day, and how the entire culture of digging for a sample source is completely different and removed from the one we went under as older people. But the fact of the matter is that since technology changed, I feel that a good percentage of us still used those type of means. Like I dug, you know, got my hands dirty digging the traditional manner, but I also did it online because the P2P sites emerged between 1999, 2000, 2001. And then once real time, the internet caught up with us and we could be on internet 24/7, when DSL modems and cable modems and things of that nature happened, going into the, digital cable era, 2002, 2003, we were looking for songs using, you know, the internet, searching, using new methods through Google, what have you. But we were also using things like any of the P2P sites that existed, like LimeWire or Kazaa, mostly for me. And I learned that people are idiots, so you have to put in the wrong song title, but anticipate that somebody thought this was the title of the song. So for instance, my brother and I, we were looking for 1999 by Common and Sadat X. And my brother and I realized that the reason we weren't finding it is because people probably listed it under something else, like still getting mine in the 199. So we put in still Common Sadat X. Do you know we found it immediately under the title Still? Multiple versions under Still. Now, I want you to think about something. We would search for songs using Kazaa and LimeWire. And me particularly, I was really into grime and dubstep and music forms from the UK that I couldn't readily have. I didn't have imports. I didn't have access to them. I didn't have pirates, UK pirates, available to me in America, in Boston. So what I had to rely on were radio rips or recordings of grime sets or clashes from pirate radio stations or Sidewinder or Dirty Canvas later or anything I could find. And I would get individual stretches of songs, but I would not know any song titles. The beats would be, the instrumental names would be wrong. I did this thing on Twitter not too long ago where I explained that for years, I thought Rebound X's Rhythm and Gash, you're like, what? Was actually called UFO Rhythm because it was uploaded as Spaceship, a song called Spaceship featuring Jamie and his brother. So I was like, wait a minute, Skepta and Jamie, Spaceship, and people would upload it as UFO Rhythm. And this is the early days of YouTube. So YouTube emerges between 2005, 2006, and done know to MySpace is a big statement. So people will go on MySpace looking for songs and shit like that. And you would like see different things playing on their MySpace, like sets like from Westwood or something like that. So it was like really crazy coming up in that era when you had to dig for things. And I got an appreciation for the younger generation. But the thing is that I still did your traditional means of digging. But I also came up in the era where we were recording things from television. We were taking things from VCRs and we were sampling them that way. Or we were recording things straight from the TV. Or we were recording from video games. So I had to have a foot in, foot out. But that's all they know. And you can't really get mad at them for being removed from a culture and methods and etiquette that they were never really introduced to or immersed in. And that's what the whole episode was about. But what happened from that episode is I talked a lot about library music. In my lap right now, I have a book, Unusual Sounds, The Hidden History of Library Music. It's a fairly thick book that goes through the history of all the different library labels. I mentioned KPM, you know. I talked about Bruton music. I didn't talk about, like, John Jack Perry. I didn't talk about him at all, you know, because I was trying to stick to specifics. I didn't talk about Montparnasse 2000. You know, I didn't talk about a bunch of different places. I mean, the German libraries. You know, I didn't talk about Conroy Recorded Music Library. I didn't talk about Chapel International. You know, I didn't talk about any of these things like Amphonic Music. You know, I'm flipping pages here. You know, I didn't talk about a whole bunch of different things because I wanted to get through my 45-minute episode and just get to the point. And I did a lot of reading. Now, today's episode is going to be a little different. And also, the thing is, this beautiful is that I'm in my living room sitting down doing this. And I have all these books in front of me. And I'm just looking because I have to figure out a way to arrange all these books. I have my rap books, the source books, the sports information books that I have, my hip-hop books, the thick ones. I have my books where it's basically music nerd shit, like Total Records. I have that book. I have The Unusual Sounds here. I have Catch the Beat over there. You know, Dustin Grooves. You know, I got, and then you have your hip-hop photography books, like At the Edge of the World, Contact High, The Hip-Hop Files by Marty Cooper. You just have all these books. I don't have Fuck You Heroes and Fuck You Heroes 2. I don't have those, the Glenn Friedman books. But, like, I'm someone who obsesses over this stuff, and, like, I have to have all my stuff together. I have all my, like, music industry books, the Kashif book, How to Make and Sell Your Recordings, Sound Advice, you know. I have all those books together. I have all my music history books together. I have my graffiti books together. I have all my another shelf entirely that FWMJ gave me, FWMJ Megan gave me. And I have all my graphic novels and all my comic books, collections, trade paperbacks, all on that shelf, all on those shelves. So it's something I obsess over. But, and like another book I have is just like sending me down a rabbit hole. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's called EVO Moment 37. One of the most famous moments in competitive gaming history. Basically, it's the Daigo parry. This is something that I've talked about online with somebody I didn't expect to be as big of an aficionado of this particular event as I am. And that's Fonte. Fonte Coleman. We've discussed this and I have a book. And it's about 200 pages. It's about the same size of the book that I'm currently writing off and on now. Nightworks. That's approximately how long I want it to be, about 200 pages, maybe 224 at the most. But the reason this episode exists is because I told you last week I want to do an episode specifically about 1985 and how 1985 was a crucial year in terms of teen coming of age films. And also on top of that, it was a great year for films that inspired and or were influential, but in different manners that you would think of. So let me just get into it, right? Let me explain. Influential films of 1985. Some of them are classics, some of them not so. Some of them I'm pretty sure you've never even heard of or thought about. But people that are in the film game or writers, creatives, have watched these films, if they're a certain age especially. Because this is the emergence of video stores happened in the 80s. And people were getting VCRs after like 1984, 85, 86. You know, and having a video rental card was super important in the mid to late 80s. And not everybody had one because you needed to have a credit card for one, right? And you had to sign off because at the time of... I think I mentioned this in a previous episode of Dark Against Humanity. VHS tapes, rental copies, ran you anywhere from $89.95 on the low end to up to $129.95. So if you destroyed a rental copy, that was dough. And back then, $129, $110 was a grip of money. When you think that people were getting paid $3 an hour, you know, back in those days, it's nuts. Now, when we look at 1985, I think of films like, first, the classic, The Breakfast Club, you know, coming of age film. People think of The Goonies, they think of St. Elmo's Fire, Back to the Future. We have Weird Science and Real Genius, which come out either the same week or the week after each other in August 1985, which is insane to think that Weird Science and Real Genius were in the theaters at the same time competing with each other. What the entire fuck? And also a little later than that, we have Better Off Dead, which is a classic comedy. Then you have Teen Wolf, which is pretty low budget, pretty trash, but it made a lot of money because Michael J. Fox was on fire after he had already made Back to the Future earlier that year. And then we look at like the films that aren't exactly classics but are influential in different ways because people watch them either as rentals or a lot when they aired on cable because they weren't a grip of different films on cable. So if you had cable, you were watching this movie over and over and over again, especially in the mid to late 80s. And now those films are films like Heaven Help Us. You're like, what the fuck is Heaven Help Us? Heaven Help Us is a movie that stars a bunch of young white actors who later became Hollywood like superstars, you know, like Mary Stuart Masterson is in Heaven Help Us, you know, like just imagine everybody who was hot in the 80s. Like a lot of these cats were like in this film early on. You know, you have Vision Quest, which is another one. A lot of people know it because of the soundtrack and Madonna's in it. She did like Crazy for You. And like all this other shit, like all the videos were like, a lot of videos had scenes from Vision Quest. And it's crazy because I hadn't seen Vision Quest. I ain't watched Vision Quest. I didn't have any really like any real reason to want to see a movie about a high school wrestler who starts smashing an older woman. You know, I'm a kid. I don't care. And, you know, later you find out that it's the film debut of Linda Fiorentino. And she's like the hot older lady or whatever. There's movies like Mask, which I think I saw, my sister rented it. I wasn't into it. It was excellent film though, you know. It came on cable a lot, won awards, got nominations. I hated The Goonies. I thought The Goonies was goofy. I wasn't impressed by it at all, but kids loved it and swore by it. And you would go over kids' houses and they'd be watching The Goonies like, hey, we're gonna watch The Goonies. Yeah, that's great, I'm out. I want to see the fucking Goonies. And I remember one time I was talking to Jean Grey and we were talking about like movies that were crucial or to like an upbringing. If you were in a certain age group, and she was like the Goonies, and I'm like, yeah, I was never into the Goonies. Like, you weren't into the Goonies. I was like, yeah, I thought it was goofy. Like, I thought it was corny. I could never get into it. And she was like, you hate the Goonies? I was like, I actually do. I've never watched it. I don't care. I watched it once, and I was like, I'm good. I hate the Goonies. She was like, don't ever tell people you hate the Goonies because they'll think you don't have a soul, Dart, and I want better for you. And that was hilarious to me. I saw another movie that was from 1985 that people pretty much watched as a rental. And for some odd reason, I would go to different schools and they had this as one of the movies that they would put in the VCR. You know, like in school back in the days, they would wheel out the VCR, turn off the lights, and the kids would watch a movie. This would be one of the movies that they put in schools. Explorers. Now, I need to preface this with something. I'm old. When I say that they used to wheel in the VCR and play a movie, they didn't do that with me until I was in high school. I used to type my term papers on a typewriter. Double spaced, 3-inch margins. I'm old. So when I was a kid, they didn't wheel in the VCR. That happened later. They used to bring in the projector. They had two projectors. They had the one that played the reel, the film strips, and then they had the one that did the slides, where doop, press the button, the next slide, doop, press the next slide, and there'd be music playing, and there'd be this old ass cassette tape. Doop. I wonder if there's a archive for those. That would be dope. Has anybody ever done a book or a documentary or anything about the educational films? They have to be collected somewhere. Anyways, Explorers was one of the tapes that was played in schools for kids. I actually saw Explorers for the first time hanging out with my boy Berwin and his little brother who went to a school that no longer exists called St. Francis de La Salle in Roxbury near Madison Park Village. Now it's just a parking lot. So there's The Legend of Billie Jean, which most people know for the Pat Benatar song Invincible.
We got a right to be angry. We will be invincible.
The Legend of Billie Jean. And like Yearly Smith was in it. Yearly Smith was also in a movie I mentioned earlier, Heaven Help Us. So Yearly Smith was just getting work. Just being the cute girl with the ponytails and everything with a weird name. Anyways, I mentioned Weird Science and Real Genius, which were released either again the same week. The first week of August or a week after each other is either August 2nd and 7th or August 2nd and 9th. I'll figure that out later. All I know is that I do remember them out the same time. I remember the commercial. I remember people talking about it when we went out places. We did not go to the theater to see either Real Genius or Weird Science or Better Off Dead. I saw Weird Science, Real Genius, and Better Off Dead, all as rentals. As soon as they hit the video store. So I'm guessing it was either late 1985 or early 86 that I saw all those movies. And the beauty of it is too that like, if I don't remember when a movie came out as a rental, I have access to all the Billboard archives, rock and roll magazine archives that covered video sales and rentals and the rental charts. And I can figure out when all of these movies actually made it as rental copies or when they left the theater. I have all these different things that it really helps a lot because I'm somebody who agonizes over these things, and I'm like, yo, when did it come out? When was it a rental? Because the new rentals were the big deal. and people would hang out with you. There were people that would be your friend and hang out with you just because you had a fucking video rental card. There were people that had girlfriends and boyfriends because they had video rental cards, VCRs, multiple TVs. If you had two VCRs, you were the fucking man slash woman slash plug. Why? If you had two VCRs, it means that you could not only record from television, and also it was important because recording from television really worked a lot better if you had cable. Back in the days, regular TV just didn't come in clear on all the channels. You had the UHF and VHF. If you had 12 channels at your disposal, that meant you really had 8 or 9. Because not every channel came in clear. And then there were the weird in-between channels based on where you lived. Living in Boston, channel 10 and channel 12 used to come in really fuzzy and staticky. But you could try to watch them. You could make out some stuff. So there were shows that like you never got. But you look in the TV guide and you're like, who watches that show? That show never comes on. Like, what channel is that on? And you try to watch it and you're like, who is watching this? And you realize, and like when I got older, I would like work in video stores and hang out with people. Like, yeah, we used to watch it on channel 10 and channel 12. Where did you grow up? And it was like, what channels came in fuzzy to you? And then they would tell us and we would laugh because it's like we grew up in alternate dimensions. What was it like watching channel 12? Like, there was this show that used to come on at 6 o'clock in the morning on Channel 12 that I used to see in TV Guide that I could never watch. What the fuck was it about? So it was like this really crazy thing that like us old people remember. Now, Weird Science and Real Genius ended up being two highly influential sci-fi slash comedies that were highly influential because for years, people tried to figure out the formula that made those films work and replicate it in the 90s and the zeros, but the shit never quite worked out. The reason being is because the 80s were a unique time period where certain things could fly. And in the 90s, you had to adjust it for the times. And by the zeros, it just didn't work anymore. When you watch a movie like Can't Hardly Wait, you could tell that the person who made it watched certain classic films from the 80s and tried to replicate it in that time period and tried to update it for the era, and it didn't quite work because the sensibilities were completely different and the hurdles that people had to overcome in order to be the cool kid were different. Like, the lens through which they did it in Can't Hardly Wait was the white kid who hangs with the white kids who try to act black or be in the hip hop or be trendy but still are geeks. At the end of the day, they tried that as the lens and it didn't quite work. Then they did the bit about the band that breaks up before it actually gets together. And then they get back together, but they never actually play. There were a lot of things that like they tried. And then like, and you could watch another movie, Never Been Kissed, I think it's called. Haven't Been Kissed, some shit, with Drew Barrymore. And you can tell that when they made that film, they watched a bunch of the 80s movies of the past and they tried to replicate it. The shit doesn't work. Like, the things that happened in Better Off Dead, you can't do that outside of the 80s. The jokes that are made, you know, you can't do that outside of 85, 86, 87, 88. Even in 89, you're like kind of pushing it. When you watch movies like One of the Guys, when you watch a movie like Can't Buy Me Love, you can't replicate some of the things that were done or attempted in those films later. And you are trying to figure out the elements that worked, that could work for audiences now. Oh shit, you just fucked up. it's just odd, man, when you see that it's not the same. So why even try to go back and replicate certain things? Now, if we're talking about a film like, let's say, what's the movie I'm thinking of? Because as I'm saying this, I'm thinking, and I'm like, no, that won't work either. Nighthawks ain't gonna work, you know? Like, what the darkness, the tone of Nighthawks? There have been plenty of dark films made, these comic book films, that would be a better choice, you know? If you're trying to replicate, like, the feel of Serpico nowadays, or the feel of Taxi Driver, or the feel of The Deer Hunter, would you try to replicate the feel of, or the feeling of Apocalypse Now? Now? You know, Dog Day Afternoon? The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3? These things don't work. So when you watch A Better Off Dead, you appreciate it for what it is because, yo, this film is funny and it's a perfect film to encapsulate the time period and preserve that in amber for us now. Holy shit, look at what this is like. The Last American Version. I would say that there are more elements of the Last American Virgin that you could take and you could emulate now. There are certain aspects in the feel of that film that can work now and be updated easily. I'd say the same about something like 3 o'clock High. 3 o'clock High is a classic. That is another classic coming of age high school film. You know, I don't know if Hiding Out technically is a classic, but there are aspects of that film that you can use now. You know, people are trying to do Back to the Future again. The shit don't work. St. Elmo's Fire. There's certain things. Breakfast Club. There are specific things about Breakfast Club that will always work. Perfect example. There are specific things about Ferris Bueller's Day Off that would work nowadays. That film was very ahead of its time in terms of themes, in terms of tone, in terms of the speed of it, in terms of the language, in terms of the meter, the timing. There was a lot about that film that was ahead of its time. It was released in summer 86. I was brought to the theater to watch it. One of the best things that ever happened to me. It was filmed in 1985. You know, and that things about that film definitely work and are timeless. But certain other shit just don't work. You're not going to be able to replicate Teen Wolf. Thank God, because Teen Wolf sucks in retrospect. Back to the Future is a classic. But again, there's a lot of shit that happens in Back to the Future that you're like, that should stay there. And when you watch people make movies and you know that they watch Back to the Future, they don't replicate Back to the Future. They make fun of what doesn't work now from Back to the Future. This is a thing that writers do. If you paid close attention to Avengers Endgame, the writers made it a point to deconstruct all the time travel films. Why? Because when you're making a genre film, you tend to harken back to previous genre films that are considered touchstones or classics or iconic films in that realm. And it happens right under your nose. Why? Because all the themes, all the tropes, all the cliches, all the foundation for those films is laid out, and you always go back to the foundation. especially when you make something new. So I mentioned, okay, so another coming of age film that people don't really talk about much, but like on 1985, 86, you either rented it or you saw it on cable, or it was one of the films that was brought out on the VCR and played for you in your class. That was The Journey of Nettie Gann. It was the debut of Meredith Salinger, who was one of the hottest girls of the 80s, and John Cusack was also in it. But The Journey of Nettie Gann was like this Disney coming of age tale, but it was hilarious because all the boys who watched it were in love with Meredith Salinger. And when they saw her in later movies, they were like, oh my God, it's Nettie Gann. And if you don't remember Meredith Salinger, just Google Meredith Salinger and you will remember Meredith Salinger, if you know what I mean. Now jump ahead, right? Heaven Help Us, I mentioned previously, it's a film that a lot of people ended up watching on HBO because it's also a HBO film. It came on cable a lot. I didn't really relate to the film that much because it was about a kid going to Catholic school. He had moved from Boston with his little sister and he was living in Brooklyn in 1965. And it was all the shit that he was going through being a Catholic kid and dealing with this priest, I guess, who was like, and the priests were like coming down on the kids and trying to bust them at the local candy shop / hangout where they were buying cigarettes and drinking and shit like that. And like one of them was really abusive. And like I couldn't relate to that film at all. Like I didn't grow up in this situation. Who's Catholic? You know, like I ain't go to Catholic school. Like I can't relate to any of this shit. It's a super white movie for me as a kid. And I was just like, and when I watched movies like that, like John Hughes films, we watched them like they were fucking documentaries. We would watch John Hughes films and Chris Columbus films, like these really white films about high school. We would watch them like it was National Geographic because that was not our reality growing up in Boston at all. We didn't have white kids. Our white kids had to be brought in from another neighborhood. Our white kids were imported. So when we watched films about this stuff, we were just like, is that how their society works? Real Genius was intriguing for me because it was a film full of white nerds. And I'm just watching it. And it's crazy because when I went to Boston Latin School, I was intrigued by how, I think I mentioned this in the previous episode of Dart Against Humanity, how evil these white kids were to each other, calling each other nerd and geek. And I'm like, yo, you're a fucking geek too. You're a nerd too. Like, you're going to go to Vassar, dog. I think I've used the same fucking, the same exact joke before. You're trying to get into Case Western Reserve. Your parents are legacies at Yale. And you're calling somebody a nerd. Like, are you fucking kidding me? You're doing calculus. And you're calling someone a nerd. Are you fucking insane? If you went to public school, they'd beat the shit out of you. Because you're the nerd. Chad. Anyway. But yeah, it was really a huge culture shock being a kid from Lower Roxbury, South End, and going to Boston Latin School, which is in Roxbury, which was full of white kids who didn't even live anywhere near you. Had to take a bus to like halfway to New York just to go to school there. And I'm just like, what? They didn't go to any public schools. They went to like parochial schools or private schools. And then their parents had tutors just to take a test. And I was like, psst. Shit, all you needed was my mom and my dad, my immigrant dad, and my mom from Alabama, Geneva County, Alabama, and all her kids got into Boston Latin with high scores, and you guys struggled, and you needed tutors and every fucking advantage necessary, and we're just some fucking poor kids from Lower Roxbury, and we got in fine, whores. Now, anyway, what else came out in 1985? Not coming-of-age teen films, but films like After Hours, which is a film that my younger brother and I used to watch over and over again. And we would talk, we would just basically scheme on how we would do the remake to After Hours and how we would update it and we would set it in Boston and what it would look like and how the music would go and what places we would use as shooting locations. My brother and I, like for like 2 years, my younger brother and I would talk about updating After Hours because it used to come on cable all the time in the late 90s. And like we became kind of obsessed with it because there was so much stuff that happened in there. And like, okay, so a movie that kind of was able to replicate some of the things in 80s movies that actually worked. I talked about a bunch of ones that didn't. One is 200 Cigarettes. Everybody was in 200 Cigarettes. I think 200 Cigarettes is probably one of the best examples of a film that was inspired by 80s movies that got it right. And I don't know exactly how to explain what they did right that worked. And then there are a lot of movies from the 90s that just watched all the 80s movies and abandoned everything and just did it the 90s way. And I'm like, yes, because what ends up happening is they become the new standards. So people watch those movies now and they try to emulate them in 2010 plus. I'm talking about movies like Go. Okay. I'm talking about movies like The Usual Suspects. I'm talking about films like pick a fucking Tarantino movie. Pick a movie Christopher McQuarrie wrote. You know, those type of films are the ones that people like emulate today as the new standards. But After Hours, definitely. One of the worst successful action films of all time. One of the most low budget and worst successful action films of all time. It's called Commando. You can see the fucking lifts from when they do the explosions. You can see the lifts when the people jump in the air after the explosions. You can see all the places they cut costs in Commando if you watch it closely. And of course, I watched it on VHS, so we were rewinding. Wait, you could see the lift. You could see this. You could see the parts, the things late. And one of the ways that they cut corners in Commando, the villain. That motherfucker was completely out of shape. Was I supposed to believe that he was the lead villain? That he was somebody supposed to be feared? And the hero is Arnold Schwarzenegger. And this is the guy that we're afraid of is supposed to kill John Matrix. John fucking Matrix is his name. There's a joke in Family Guy where the main character's name is John Everyman. Death spares not the tiger. The main character's name is John Everyman. John Matrix. Me and my brother were fucking crying laughing. John Matrix. They named this motherfucker John Matrix. And you see the bad guy? He doesn't even know how to hold his knife. Like, come on. Try. He's wearing like a Jamaican shirt with like holes in it and shit. And like my brother and I were just crying, laughing, watching this movie, man. It's like, this shit is so low budget. I eat green berets for breakfast. I can't stand this macho bullshit. And you know, and it starred like the lady of the 80s, Ray Dawn Chong. Now, I've already mentioned Commando, which was trash, but we watched it a lot. Jagged Edge. This was a movie that everybody was talking about at school. It was filthy. It was filth, flarn, filth. And you could get away with watching it. Everybody be like, yo, you see Jagged Edge? Jagged Edge. Who's Jagged Edge? Oh, Jagged Edge. Yo, that shit is crazy, right? Yeah. When Homeboy, yeah. Anyway, so Jagged Edge is one of those films. Nightmare on Elm Street 2 came out. Everybody saw that. The two films I haven't mentioned are The Last Dragon and Crush Groove. The Last Dragon, I'm not a huge fan of. I loved it when I was a kid. I've written an article about it on Medium you can read. I cringe every time I see it now. Another inside thing is that it starred Tay Mack, but it was supposed to star a dude from Boston named Keith Rosary. Keith Rosary butted heads with Berry Gordy and several other people on production and thought the movie was corny and refused to do it and walked out. And that's how Tay Mack got the role. So a black dude from Boston was like, this shit's stupid, and bounced. And now everybody watches it for Bruce Leroy and The Glow and I'm the Master. It could have been a black dude from Boston, but it wasn't going to be a black dude from Boston because he was like, fuck this. So he went off and did martial arts competitions and acted in films and was a bodyguard to a whole bunch of people in Hollywood, a real bodyguard. Keith Rosary came up competing against another martial arts legend from Boston. Maybe you know him. His name is Donnie Yen. He even beat him a few times. Look it up. Now, anyway, when I think about these old films, I think about the old TriStar. The TriStar at the beginning of the film, that fucking Pegasus jumping the T, and then the logo coming up and it being that shit. Another film that was big for me in 1985, Star Chaser, The Legend of Orin. It was one of the earliest PG-13 films. It was animated. It was 3D. It's a movie that I saw for the first time again as a rental. Then I saw it all the time on cable. It was kind of a bite of Star Wars, an animated bite of Star Wars, but it was a highly influential film because it was copied several times over by other films. And it's hilarious when I think about it, right? Titan AD. If you ever heard of Titan AD, do me a favor. Watch Star Chaser, The Legend of Orin from 1985, then watch fucking Titan AD. Another animated film. You're going to be like, wait a minute. Did the people that made Titan A.D. grow up watching Star Chaser, Legend of Orin? It's kind of weird how, like, when I was sitting in the theater with my brother and we went to, I think, Jordan's Furniture, and we went to see, what was the name of that movie that people think is a fucking classic but nobody really cares about? And they keep talking about the sequel but nobody really gives a fuck. But they're convinced people care. The one with Unobtainium in it, and Scrown, and ICU, the Na'vi. What the fuck was the name of that movie? Oh, Avatar. I had to do all that to figure out the name of the movie, and it's supposedly one of the biggest movies of all time, whatever. So I remember sitting in the theater with my 3D glasses on, watching Avatar, and funny because I listen back to these episodes and I can hear me scratching my beard. It's hilarious. Anyways, so we're watching Avatar, me and my brother sit next to each other, my big brother, Dave. And I'm sitting in the theater and things happening. I'm watching stuff and I hear, didn't this happen in Ferngully? Why is this like Ferngully? Holy shit, this is exactly what happened in Ferngully. This is like Ferngully. Yeah, this shit happened in Ferngully, all right. And the theater starts laughing. People start cracking up. And my brother starts laughing. He's like, yo, people keep bringing up Ferngully. I was like, dude, there was more than one Ferngully, too. I think there were two of them. But things happened in that movie that people saw coming. They're like, wait, that happened in this. And it was hilarious sitting there because it's like, this is supposed to be this big movie and this big experience is supposed to transport you to another place. And motherfuckers are sitting in the theater thinking about a children's cartoon that they saw a long time ago that isn't really considered a classic, but everybody saw it. Star Chaser, Legend of Orin is one of those things, right? So, Crush Groove. Crush Groove came out in 1985, but I'm going to do a specific episode about, I believe, Crush Groove. Am I? I think when I do that, it's going to be like near the end of Dart Against Humanity. So that's going to be like in the 90s, the late 90s episode probably. So I'll get to Crush Groove later. The Last Dragon I don't want to talk about. Nightmare on Elm Street 2. I'm sure you saw it. So anyway, this is my episode that I did about, 1985 films and shit like that. I didn't go into full detail because I wanted to keep this episode like 45 minutes, under 50 minutes. I'm going to call this episode Civilized an 85er. Only certain people are going to get that joke. And there's a holiday coming up for some of you. I'm just going to eat. I don't care. Because liberty and shit, I ain't feeling it, ball. I ain't feeling it. So everybody stay safe. One.